Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. California cities continue to see significant rent increases, and we're not expecting changes anytime soon. According to Governor Jerry Brown's 2017-2018 budget, about half of California households spend more than 30% of their income on rent. Nearly one-third spend 50% of their income on rent. Rent in San Jose increased 57% from 2005 to 2015. Here in San Francisco, where 64% of the population rents, one bedrooms are listed for $3,000 or more a month. The North Bay is undergoing a compounded crisis. Last year's fires destroyed thousands of housing units in an area which already had a 5% vacancy rate. It's nearly impossible to find a place to live there. Key to the debate about solutions is the 1995 Costa-Hawkins Rental Housing Act. The law applies to the 15 cities in California with rent control. It prevents those cities from establishing rent control or rent caps on buildings constructed after 1995. Landlords who own those buildings are free to raise the rent to market rates once a unit or once a tenant moves out. Last month, the Democratic-controlled Assembly Housing Committee voted down a Costa-Hawkins Act repeal. The repeal needed four votes, and it died 3-2 after Assembly members Jim Wood of Healdsburg and Ed Chow of Arcadia abstained from voting. The hearing was attended by hundreds of supporters and opponents. Supporters are currently gathering signatures to put a Costa-Hawkins repeal on the November ballot. So on today's Your Call, we will hear from advocates for tenants and landlords. What solutions would they like to see, and is there any common ground about how to address this increasingly dire situation? Today, we are joined by Christina Livingston. Christina is Executive Director of the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, or ACE. ACE works in communities across the state, organizing low and moderate income neighborhoods on issues of racial, economic, and social justice. ACE is behind the Costa-Hawkins repeal initiative with Michael Weinstein, president of the AIDS Healthcare Foundation in Los Angeles, and Christina joins us in studio. Hi, Christina. Thank you for coming in.
Hi, of course. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Davin Cardenas. Davin is co-director of the North Bay Organizing Project in Santa Rosa. They work with immigrant and low-income communities. And Davin joins us from Roanoke Park. Hi, Davin. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And hopefully we will be joined by Deborah Carlton, Senior VP of Public Affairs for the California Apartment Association. They represent more than 13,000 owners, investors, and managers of rental homes and apartment communities, and they oppose rent control campaigns in places like Santa Rosa and Richmond. Davin, I want to start with you, get an update on what's happening in the North Bay. I can't believe it's already been 4 months since the devastating fires incinerated thousands of homes in Sonoma County. And vacancy rates were already so low before the fires, about 5%. And Santa Rosa and Petaluma, which is where I grew up, have seen some of the highest rent increases in the state. This happened before the fires. So give us an overview of what's happening in terms of rental housing in the North Bay.
Yeah, I think the way you laid it out was correct in terms of, you know, over the last 5 years, we had already seen 50% rent increases in the North Bay, the Bay Area housing crisis being compounded here in the North Bay, the push out coming from San Francisco, Oakland. We've been feeling the effects, and so that's nothing new. And in Santa Rosa, you know, the vacancy rate was more around 1 to 2%. So we were already in a crunch, and of course, the fires that recently happened in October took out about 5% of our housing stock. So from what I understand, we actually have a negative vacancy rate right now. And rents since the fires have gone up 36%.
Wow.
in the region, because there are landlords taking advantage of the situation, taking advantage of the vacancy rate, taking advantage of the vulnerability of working people in the North Bay, and making money and making profit off of it. So what we had prior to the fires has been just heightened, and North Bay residents and even workers trying to look for work or find work or do the rebuilding of the currently burnt out areas are also scrambling to find housing. So it's kind of a housing melee up here right now in terms of people who are most vulnerable, most susceptible to rent increases, to evictions, being kind of at the center of the crisis.
36%, that's the increase that you've seen since the fires. So what is a one bedroom going for right now in Santa Rosa?
It varies, and right now as well, a lot of multi-home owners who own several homes in the area are maybe someone got burned out of their own home, and now they're beginning to move into their second home and evicting longer-term tenants. And also there's this push to rent, and insurance companies are paying a high premium for these second homes to rent out to insured former homeowners. So the costs are going to vary right now, but it could go, a one bedroom could go anywhere from $1,400 to $2,000 and up. So it's varying and it's in flux right now, but it's not a place for working people. And that's kind of the point we want to really make, is that if we intend to create a community that flourishes, that is inclusive of its workers, inclusive of its middle class and its young professionals and its young families, then we really have to take into account the voices of workers and those communities first, really give them a centered platform in talking about the reconstruction and what our North Bay, what our Bay Area can be if we're visionary about how we go about it.
That is Davin Cardenas, co-director of the North Bay Organizing Project in Santa Rosa. They work with immigrant and low-income communities, and it is, as you've been hearing, really difficult for people in the Santa Rosa area to find housing after the fires. Christina, I've been reading about rent increases from Fresno to Sacramento. I mean, we know what's going on in San Francisco and Oakland, but places like Vallejo and places that we didn't really talk about 5 years ago are now seeing major rent increases.
Yeah, that's right. And really, there are two main reasons why we're seeing that happen. One is because as people are being pushed out of the communities that they're living in their urban centers, out of Oakland, out of Los Angeles, out of San Diego, they are moving into these cities that are seen as more affordable. They're moving into Fresno. They're moving into parts of Contra Costa County and Solano County. They're moving into Sacramento. And that is, in turn, giving those landlords the thought that they can increase the rent, because folks with a bit more revenue, income than they had before, are able to pay higher rents. The second reason, though, is actually really interesting, that after the foreclosure crisis, Wall Street landlords actually started to buy up huge housing stocks in particular areas. We saw them go into places that were previously economically suppressed, and whether or not they knew it, certainly had some real development on the horizon, particularly, for instance, South Central Los Angeles, West Oakland. And we saw, actually, they bought up a lot of property in Contra Costa County and in Solano County. There are several properties in Vallejo. And in those areas, even though Wall Street landlords actually have a pretty small percentage of the overall housing population, housing stock, in those areas in particular, they have real density. And so as they are increasing rents astronomically and increasing fees, it is actually inflating what the market rate is in those communities. And it's arbitrary inflation, and it is based on nothing more than the fact that they've got a real density and that they have outsized impact on what rent can be in those neighborhoods.
How are you able to keep track of which units are bought by Wall Street speculators?
I mean, there are databases that show, which are their units. And we're actually talking to their tenants. So we get those lists and we're talking to their tenants. And we're really understanding that the way that those landlords, Wall Street is not intended to be a landlord. And so the way that they are behaving is actually really predatory in the way that there's no human interaction. They don't care anything about the communities or the neighborhoods. They are not from those communities and neighborhoods. Their sole objective is to get the largest amount of money from the renters there. And if that means kicking folks out and forcing them to leave the communities that they grew up in, forcing them to leave the state or even to become homeless, they really don't care at all about that.
So if Vallejo sees an influx of people from the Bay Area, for example, which is happening, and let's say a family home is renting for $2,000 or $2,500 a month, then the neighborhood next door will increase their rates.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're talking about places like Sacramento, Fresno, Vallejo, places that we didn't talk about 4 or 5 years ago but are now seeing rent increases. What about the Bay Area? Two of my friends were just evicted in the last couple of weeks. We're still seeing evictions. What are you seeing in terms of rents here?
Yeah, I mean, the Bay Area is the hotbed of where we've seen rents get so far out of control that it seems unrealistic, like unreal what's happening. I think the average two-bedroom in Oakland right now might be at $2,800 a month. And it might even be high. I mean, it's gone really high. And what we've seen is, you know, folks who are living in sort of the tech or working in the tech industry are trying to find rents that are a little bit more affordable than in San Francisco. And they obviously have a lot more income than indigenous community members of Oakland. And that combined with all of the development that's happening is just really skyrocketing the rents. And the problem, of course, with the development that is happening is that the development is largely market rate or luxury units, because the narrative that's being told in Sacramento is that this is a supply problem and the solution to the supply problem is build, build, build. And so this is basically a trickle-down housing solution that's being proposed. And I would say that there are two problems with that. First of all, what we've known historically about any trickle-down solution is that it never trickles down far enough or fast enough to really affect the communities that I'm working with. Low-income and even working-class communities are not going to see relief. And even when if they do, it will be decades down the road. And people of color, I mean, the folks that are being targeted, they are the ones who are going to be gone long before these solutions actually come to fruition. The other problem, though, is, of course, we have a supply problem. But what is being masked, if we're only looking at the supply problem, is the equity problem. I mean, we need affordable housing. We need housing that is affordable to people who are teachers. We need housing that's affordable to the folks who are cleaning up the facilities at Google. We need housing that's affordable to people who are working in retail. That is really where we have a problem of not seeing enough housing that's available. And the solutions that are being proposed are really not putting forward any response to the person who today is a hardworking, maybe working two or three jobs at a time, you know, family person who is going to be just kicked out of their home and kicked out of their community. So we need to find those kinds of solutions. And that's where, from our perspective, we need to get more rent control laws, and we need to unchain the hands of cities that are putting forward rent control laws by repealing Costa Hawkins.
Christina Livingston is the executive director of the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, and they are working on the Costa Hawkins repeal initiative. It went down recently by the Democratic-controlled Assembly Housing Committee, and now supporters are gathering signatures to put that repeal on the November ballot. We're also joined by Davin Cardenas, co-director of the North Bay Organizing Project in Santa Rosa. They work with low-income communities and immigrant communities, and he said after the fires, some of the rents in the North Bay have gone up 36%. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions or comments, stories to share about rent in California, what are your solutions? What would you like to see? If you rent or if you're a landlord, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Now I would like to welcome Deborah Carlton to the show. Deborah is Senior Vice President of Public Affairs for the California Apartment Association. They represent more than 13,000 owners, investors, developers of rental homes and apartment communities. And Deborah, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you. I read in a number of reports that the California Apartment Association has spent about $1 million on anti-rent control campaigns in cities like Santa Rosa and Richmond. Is that right? I just want to make sure that number is right.
Yeah. You know, there have been a lot of, obviously, local measures that have come forward to encourage and pass rent control. And we have a lot of small owners in those areas who have put up money because of the fear of what rent control would do to their housing.
Okay, so is that right, about a million?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you're exactly right.
All right, so before we get in and talk about the solutions, I understand that when the North Bay fires hit, your organization asked landlords to limit rent increases by about 10%, or in some cases, not at all, right? Did people honor that?
That's correct, yes. We have a current declaration by the governor issuing a state of emergency. So state law says you cannot increase your rents by more than 10%. We've asked owners to not increase their rents at all and to make their units available. We have a website and we've sent all of that information into the local cities and are working with the attorney general. And you know what? And I think what's most disturbing, as your previous speakers indicated, there have been some bad actors. And we're working with a local district attorney. There's been claims filed against owners who just didn't abide by the law.
Right, and, because right, yeah. We heard from Daveen that they're seeing some 36% increases.
Yeah, you know, that's just not only illegal, but certainly unethical in a time when they're at probably zero vacancy there in the area.
What are you hearing from apartment owners about this crisis? I mean, as we're hearing from Daveen and Christina, and you know, we've got a crisis in this state.
We do.
And it's
yes.
hitting so many cities, places that I never thought in Petaluma I would see a one-bedroom go for $1,500 a month, but that's what we're seeing now. So what are you hearing from apartment owners about this crisis?
Yeah, you know, we agree there is a crisis. It's been almost 50 years in the making, and that's been so unfortunate. You know, I wish we had a magic wand where we could balance the market. Unfortunately, we see cities that aren't allowing construction to take place, and we get a lot of opposition at the local level. And I do get it, as your previous speakers indicated, that, you know, that's not the overnight solution because, of course, the discussion about supply and demand, you know, doesn't sit well with everybody. But obviously, the market is not balanced. And when you end up with vacancies, you know, at 5% or less, that's what, unfortunately, in many cases, drives up the demand because you have the, you know, the, if you want to say, the people, the wealthy that can spend the money on those rents come in and take up the available housing. And I think that's just a problem for the workers that certainly need housing because, you know, you do need the individuals who, you know, work at the Starbucks and clean the homes, and it has to be a balanced market. And unfortunately, today it's not.
And what about the landlords that you work with? A friend of mine last night has been in her place for a long time, and she said, I have the most amazing landlord. He's not raising our rents, even though he can. And then you have what Christina described as some of these Wall Street landlords who are raising rents. I mean, we've heard of people whose rents have been raised double, even more than that, right? So can you talk about the differences between landlords? Do you work with landlords across the board?
Yeah, we have a very diverse membership, although 75% of our members own less than 10 units. So, they're the small mom and pops, and I think those are the people that are very concerned about making sure we have a balanced market. But as for the real estate investment trust that came in during the foreclosure crisis and they bought up a lot of boarded up homes, you know, at the time you would say, you know, they did something that was helpful for the community because, of course, you didn't want those homes sitting boarded up. It was certainly harmful for neighborhoods. As for the rising rents, I don't know that, and I can't speak to whether or not that's happening, but I'll take your other speaker's word for it. I think the biggest concerns we have with, you know, talking about a strict form of rent control is that we have to find a way to balance not only construction with, you know, the other solutions, because unfortunately all those owners, or the owners, the Wall Street, if you call them owners, that have these single family homes will have the option to sell them, and they will just simply sell them to people who can buy them, displacing the current renters that are there. So we want to be very conscientious about how we start talking about balancing the market. And when you're talking about strict rent control, we're very concerned that we will, you know, scare the marketplace into selling off all those single family homes without a really positive solution.
That is Deborah Carlton, Senior VP of Public Affairs for the California Apartment Association. Their owners have spent about $1 million on anti-rent control campaigns in cities like Santa Rosa and Richmond. Davin Cardenas is co-director of the North Bay Organizing Project in Santa Rosa, where they have seen some rents increase by 36% since the horrific fires 4 months ago. Christina Livingston is executive director of the Alliance for Californians for Community Empowerment, and they are behind the Costa Hawkins repeal initiative. And let's hear from Neil in San Francisco, who has a Costa Hawkins story. Hi, Neil. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about how Costa Hawkins is also being used to evict people from rent control departments in San Francisco. Because if you're not on the original lease, Costa Hawkins states that you can also be kicked out, even if the landlord has accepted money from you, even if you've paid them to stay there. My eviction came after an attempt to raise my rent from $2,000 to $8,000 a month.
$2,000 to $8,000?
Yes, it was the largest rent increase in San Francisco history. And they were able to get me out. And they actually filed another eviction after I moved out. It's one of the most notoriously bad actors in San Francisco. But as far as Costa Hawkins, it's not just single-family homes. It's apartments as well.
Wow. What did you do, Neil?
I had to go. I fought, but after the rent board, who's working pretty closely with landlords in San Francisco these days, ruled that the rent increase was legal, there was no possible way I could stay.
Well, thank you for calling in. Let's talk about Costa Hawkins, Christina. ACE is behind the repeal initiative. This passed in 1995, and it applies to the 15 cities in California with rent control, which includes San Francisco. Tell us what this law does exactly.
Sure. And just to be clear, it actually applies to every city, so long as they try to enact rent control. So the law does three things. It says that you cannot apply rent control to any unit built after 1995. It says that you cannot apply rent control to single-family units or to condos. And it says that once a unit that has rent control becomes vacant, that the landlord can charge whatever rent that they want to charge. So essentially, it is restricting the ability of local cities who decide to enact rent control to enact it in the way that they believe is best for their city. And we believe that repealing it basically would allow cities to choose the kind of rent control that works for them and will create both a stable and healthy community and allow for more people to engage in the conversation about how to deal with the larger housing problem.
So the new buildings that we're seeing right now, even in San Francisco, will never be rent controlled.
Under Costa Hawkins.
Under Costa Hawkins, right.
Yes.
And last month, the Democratic-controlled Assembly Housing Committee voted down a Costa Hawkins Act repeal. It needed four votes. It died 3-2. After two Democrats, Jim Wood of Hillsburg, Ed Chau of Arcadia, abstained from voting. And a number of supporters and opponents were there. Tell us about what went down that day.
Yeah. Well, the bill actually was introduced the year before, last year, and it was not going to be taken up by the Assembly. And we were really concerned about that. Luckily, you know, two-year bills are a thing, and we were able to convince the author to put it forward this year. And we did a lot of work, you know, talking to tenants and getting them engaged in this conversation. And, you know, hundreds of tenants went up that day, and they wanted to tell their stories, and they weren't able to do that. And they were really hurt, saddened to hear that their legislators were deciding that the solutions that that community members really thought was important were not worth the full conversation and wouldn't vote the bill out of committee.
And now ACE and others are trying to get Costa Hawkins on the November ballot.
That's right.
You need a lot of signatures, right?
Yes. We need 365,880 valid signatures to qualify it for the November ballot. We've already collected a quarter of those signatures. There's a huge volunteer campaign with tenants and supporters of tenants out on the streets asking other folks to sign the petitions. It really is so easy to get people to sign it, because the truth is that almost everybody that you talk to either themselves feel like they are in danger of being evicted or know somebody who has recently been evicted or is in danger of being evicted. People see this as a real community crisis, and they want the chance to have their vote heard in November.
Christina Livingston, Executive Director of the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, or ACE. And after the break, we'll get our other guest to talk about Costa Hawkins. Davin Cardenas is co-director of the North Bay Organizing Project in Santa Rosa. Deborah Carlton is Senior VP of Public Affairs for the California Apartment Association. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about marijuana legalization in California. Who will benefit, and how will racially biased drug laws change? Oakland has an equity permit program that gives first dibs on getting a license to sell marijuana to people who've been convicted of marijuana-related crimes. And then San Francisco's district attorney is dismissing misdemeanor convictions for marijuana possession dating back 40 years, which means that thousands of people will have their criminal records cleared. That is tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we'll be joined by Richard Rothstein. We'll talk about his new book, The Color of Law, A Forgotten History of How Our Government Segregated America. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are talking about the affordable housing crisis in California. Rents are still out of control. Now we're seeing rents increase in Fresno, Santa Rosa, Sacramento. According to the governor's budget, half of renters spend 30% of their income on rent, and one-third spend 50% of their income on rent. If you have a question or comment, what do you think are the solutions? If you're a renter or a landlord and you have a story to share, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Christina Livingston is Executive Director of the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. They are working to put a Costa Hawkins repeal on the November ballot. Davin Cardenas is co-director of the North Bay Organizing Project in Santa Rosa. And Deborah Carlton is Senior VP of Public Affairs for the California Apartment Association. Their members have spent $1 million on anti-rent control campaigns in cities like Santa Rosa and Richmond. Deborah, I understand a number of opponents were in Sacramento when the Costa Hawkins repeal went down. Can you talk about why the California Apartment Association opposes a repeal?
Sure. Well, certainly when the law was passed in the 90s, it was a way to change what was happening in our strict rent-controlled communities. You know, we were seeing gentrification. We were seeing units being taken off of the market. For us, you know, we considered that a way to try to find what we considered a more fair and balanced approach when it came to rent control. So as you defined earlier, the legislature agreed to put in place the Costa Hawkins Act, which changed the way in which the strict forms of rent control were being applied in our communities, you know, in the 1970s and 80s. So we, of course, want to see that that is a continued process, because we are concerned that if we return back to the, you know, the gentrification of the 1970s, if single-family homes are taken off the market, and if new construction comes to slow or halt, we are going to find ourselves in a worse situation, and it's certainly not something that's going to help the housing market going forward.
Davin, what do you think about that? You're trying to gather signatures with the North Bay Organizing Project. How would this repeal affect Santa Rosa and other nearby communities?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I want to point out is that Costa Hawkins is a kind of a relic of the Pete Wilson era politics, a deeply racialized politics in California history, the mid-90s, where you saw Prop 187 and other racist policies passed by the legislature. And Costa Hawkins is one of those that came out at that time. So it's also the fact that there are California legislators now taking Costa Hawkins up again, the fact that there's a grassroots effort underway as we speak right now is also, you know, for me also is a signal of the inevitability of policies like that, this that affect communities, underprivileged communities, communities of color, the most, they're going to be overturned. It's inevitable. Whether it's this November or soon after, these things are going to be overturned because, like we know, bad landlords make the best organizers. And I think tenants across California are starting to see that, feel that, and it's being reflected in the policies that are being taken up on a statewide level, like the repeal of Costa-Hawkins and the various cities that are now taking up rent control, just cause eviction campaigns. We are supportive of the repeal of Costa-Hawkins, and we also hope that, you know, we had a special election campaign on rent control last June here in Santa Rosa, and I also want to clarify that the apartment association almost spent $1 million alone in Santa Rosa, in Santa Rosa alone, and the large majority of that money invested in the anti-rent control campaign came from out of state. You had $500,000 donations coming in from realtor groups in Chicago. It wasn't mom and pops on the ground putting up the money to repeal this. There was a lot of interest and a target on Santa Rosa and the renters of Santa Rosa. But in that campaign, the majority of council members, for instance, in the city of Santa Rosa, they actually said they don't support rent control. A minority said they didn't support rent control, and they said they didn't support it because it created two tiers of renters, some that would benefit from rent control and some that wouldn't. So Costa-Hawkins actually takes that off the table and it gives autonomy to local jurisdictions to actually take up what might be the best policy. So we hope that those who said they weren't supporting rent control last year and the last few years, this might actually create that space where they can come on board and begin supporting rent control to take away those two tiers that we didn't create. But again, the legislators from the Pete Wilson era of California actually created upon us. So we hope we can repeal it, and we hope that local jurisdictions actually have the autonomy to create the rent control necessary to protect their workforce, to protect the people in their own communities.
According to the Press Democrat, local groups were outspent by about 5-1. You had national real estate lobbyists and financial groups spending money to defeat Measure C, and it got 47.5% of the vote. What about that, Deborah? You know, people are so angry about this, about people from out-of-state groups, financial groups, and real estate lobbyists from out-of-state spending money on these rent control initiatives.
Well, I don't know that that was the large amount of the money that came in. The bottom line was that the local voters disagreed with rent control. And I think the problem that we face in areas like Santa Rosa is no new construction has happened. There's a huge NIMBY population there. And even if you were to pass rent control in that jurisdiction, it will do nothing at all to help anybody who needs a place to live. Now with the fires, reconstruction is even difficult. People are finding it very difficult to find a place to live. And I think that's the bottom line conversation here, is where, how do we make sure that we balance the existing tenants who want to benefit from lower rents with new, our children that are going to need a place to live? That will not happen. Rent control does not build housing. And that's our concern.
Christina?
Sure. You know, I agree, rent control doesn't build new housing. I will say the one thing that rent control does is that it is the cheapest and fastest way to create a housing stock of affordable housing that wasn't there previously. So that's important to note. And I will say, you know, we do need to come up with some solutions for construction. And we need to do that collectively as a full community, as a community of all of the people that live there and not just the wealthiest folks who can afford to live there. The worry about construction coming to a halt under rent control, I feel like, is an important one to raise up, because under almost every rent control law, maybe every rent control law that's been passed, new construction has been exempted. And so rent control aside, there has been a construction problem all along. And that is, again, something we need to come together and figure out how to talk about. And I want to just go back for a second. Deborah raised an important point about mom-and-pop landlords who are worried about, you know, if they are going to be able to generate enough revenue by renting out their units under rent control. And I want to raise up another important point, which is that under California law, landlords are actually, they are guaranteed a reasonable rate of return on their on their units, a reasonable rate of return, which is important because that is something that they need and that they rely on. But what it does do by placing rent control is it limits the amount of rent that can be charged, that can be gouged, that can be, sort of the wealth that can be stripped from communities who are really just trying to make it and are being, half of the community, half of renters paying more than 30% of their income, that's a real rent burden. If you count housing costs, California has the highest poverty rate in this in the union. So what we basically said last year after, we saw a lot of attacks on communities of color, on immigrants, on undocumented folks, we in California said, we want to make California a sanctuary state. We saw an outpouring of support for that in the community. We saw that in the legislature. And yet we are willing to say we're not worried about those same communities being able to afford the housing to stay in California. It feels important to us that we are creating a California where people can thrive and stay in the state and that they're not homeless, not just white folks, not just wealthy folks, right? The full community. That's what we said last year. And basically, by restoring the right of local cities to protect tenants from skyrocketing rents with the Affordable Housing Act, we can make California affordable again, where families can live. And that is an important point to remember.
We have an email from a listener who says, the census says more than 100,000 San Franciscans have incomes less than $35,000 a year. Two-thirds of my income goes to pay rent, says our listener. San Francisco has built no affordable housing in more than 10 years. Affordable meaning for the more than 100,000 San Franciscans who live on less than 35 grand a year. In other words, despite all the hype, San Francisco has not built housing for folks who earn less than $35,000. I mean, the word affordable is thrown around constantly, but we don't really define what that means.
Right. And the truth is, right now, the housing that's being built is not affordable. It's certainly not affordable to very low-income folks, It's not even really affordable for working-class families. And that is a real problem. And I think so, as we're having this conversation, I think it is important to say we have to find solutions for that full range of income earners and not just for the wealthy folks.
Christina Livingston is Executive Director of the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. Davin Cardenas is Co-Director of the North Bay Organizing Project in Santa Rosa. And Deborah Carlton is Senior VP of Public Affairs for the California Apartment Association. We've got a number of callers on the line. Let's go through a few and then we'll get comments from our guests. Let's hear from Tim in Redwood City. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I just had a comment. My parents bought a home out here in San Francisco in 1970 for, I believe it was up to like $45,000, junior home. The fact that I'm speaking from a millennial point of view, that me and my wife, we have steady jobs, and to buy that same home today, it will probably cost me 1.5.
Yeah.
That's the problem in California. The generation of wealth has not passed on, and you got a lot of people coming from out of town forgetting that this place is sitting on the fault line at that. And we're talking about big investments here. Any time of the day, I hate to sound like doomsday, but, it can happen any day now. And the millennial building is falling, sinking into the ground, and that's one of the problems in California. This is a rural state. There's a lot of rural areas in this state, and nobody's building, nowhere else, and everybody's trying to pack it in San Francisco and throughout the Bay Area. That's just my comment. Mm. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in, Tim. We'll get responses in a minute. Let's go next to Misha in San Francisco. Hi, Misha. Welcome to the show.
Hi. What bothers me about this conversation is that it just seems too easy to bash wealthy landowners and property owners and not to understand that a significant part of the problem really is supply. And this is not a left-wing versus right-wing, capitalist versus, workers sort of question. Organizations like SPUR, which is an organization, a nonprofit that studies good urban planning, academic institutions like the Fisher School of Real Estate at UC Berkeley, these sorts of groups that really study these issues frequently come to the conclusion that unfettered rent control simply doesn't work. And I have the greatest sympathy for people that are struggling with a lack of affordability in San Francisco and throughout the state. But it really upsets me when I hear people talking about, you know, fat cat Wall Street, Wall Street investors, when Costa-Hawkins doesn't even apply to apartment buildings. It applies to single-family homes. It applies to condos. Frequently, those are homes that have been purchased after years and years of savings by, you know, individuals like you and me. And it just seems wrong to tarnish that entire group of people as somehow, you know, greedy and rapacious.
Well, we're talking about a wide range of landlords. Christina brought up Wall Street landlords. These are groups that buy up large tracts of homes, right? And I believe that he's wrong on Costa-Hawkins. This applies to, can you tell us what it applies to exactly after 1995?
Right. So nothing after 1995.
Nothing.
Right. So even apartment buildings that were built after 1995 do not have, you cannot impose rent control on those.
All right. So it's single family apartments, condos,
and anything,
everything
after
1995.
Yes.
Okay. Now, since he brought up, I mean, you didn't say that these people are, you know, greedy. I mean, you're basically saying that Wall Street, are these private equity firms? Can you be more specific about when you say Wall Street is buying up?
Sure.
Tracts of homes.
Right. So private equity firms and hedge funds, the largest are actually, they've merged. Three of them have now merged together. But Colony Starwood is now the largest. And they really are. They are made up of Wall Street hedge firms and private equity funds. And they are required to produce dividends for their investors. And that is the truth of, you know, of the matter. And we have seen that they, right after the foreclosure crisis, they bought up huge swaths of land, huge swaths of the housing stock. They did some, you know, cosmetic repair. They put people in. And what we've seen over these last 5 years, I mean, rent increases of up to double at times, fee gouging, really deplorable conditions. There's a woman who lives in Oakland, Vanessa Bulness, and she ran a daycare from the home that she was renting. And there was mold. And so she reported the mold to Blackstone, and they refused to come and clean it up. She ended up losing her license to hold her daycare there. And in the meantime, they tried to kick her out. And so, you know, she had to have that fight. The point is that Wall Street landlords, they are not good people in the community who care about the folks that live there. They are driven by profit. And that is not the full swath of landlords, but it is an important piece to remember, particularly because the way that they are interacting with tenants is sort of resetting the relationship between tenants and landlords in many situations, and we cannot allow them to be the standard bearer for how tenants should be interacting with landlords and how, you know, exorbitantly rates should go up for rent, et cetera. So that's a particular problem. But it is not the case that that's every landlord. And again, I think it is important that we understand that landlords, particularly the mom-and-pop landlords, they do rely on the income from these rental units, and they, again, are guaranteed a reasonable rate of return. That's just a piece that we also want to keep in mind. And I will say that we have a group of landlords and realtors for rent control who we are working with, and that group is growing every day. And they understand that there is a bit of a break in the social contract between tenants and landlords, who frankly need one another. And if either side, you know, starts to be too selfish, it becomes a problem. And we do not think that rent control is selfishness on the part of tenants. It actually is them asking for some stability in their housing, stability. And, you know, they are hardworking people, and they need to know that they can stay in the home that they are renting, the same way that landlords need to know and homeowners need to know that they're not going to be priced out, for instance, because of increases of property taxes, right? There's a level of, like, stability that people need to have in order to have a good relationship with one another and to sort of drive this forward.
So you've been able to find common ground with some landlords. Mm-hmm. Have you been able to find common ground with, for example, the California Apartment Association on any issues?
Well, you know, my assumption is that they actually also have some concerns about these Wall Street landlords, and we should talk about that and talk about those, you know, how to rebalance the scales there. You know, we're really open to having future conversations with the Apartment Association and figuring out solutions that work for all of us. But what we know is that there's bleeding happening now and that we need to make sure that people stay in their homes in order to have those conversations.
Deborah, what about that finding common ground?
Yeah, you know, I agree completely with Christina. In fact, we have worked on legislation to protect tenants. We've worked on legislation to make sure that there's not unfair discrimination. And we absolutely and are willing to talk about solutions for this housing crisis. I think, of course, unfortunately, hanging over our heads is the initiative, which prevents us because the initiative has no way of providing some sort of possibility for sitting down and finding some common ground.
I just want to say I don't see why not. The initiative doesn't actually place rent control anywhere. It is allowing cities to decide what kind of rent control works best for them. And I think giving folks more opportunity to decide what works for them is a good thing. And I don't see why that would preclude us from having a conversation about how to find future solutions, because there is a larger problem that we all need to work on together.
Yeah. And you know, I think the focus is unfortunate because it's all about, you know, the focus of the initiative. And certainly the rent-controlled cities today are low-hanging fruit. They will pass more stringent forms of rent control. And we're very concerned about what's going to happen in those cities, you know, if the initiative passes, because that's just an easy, as you indicated, it's an easy solution. And I think in cities like San Francisco, Santa Monica, and Berkeley, we will see more stringent forms of rent control, and we won't have places for our future population to live.
Well, I would just say that I see it as what we will see is more protection of tenants and more availability of a full conversation, because we won't be pushing people out into the streets and out of the state.
Devin, what would you add?
I agree with Christina in that forward-thinking landlords have also formed the basis, a strong component of our push for rent stabilization here. And I think, as she spoke earlier, creating policies where even landlords are guaranteed a fair rate of return on their investment would be a benefit. It's very hard to say in a city like Santa Rosa what rent control would or would not do, because we don't have it. All we know is that the housing stock is already decimated, the rents have shot up, and we work closely with forward-thinking landlords. But I also will say that it has been small landlords and often mom and pops who have been at the forefront of shooting the rents up locally as well and getting well more than a fair rate on their return. They're the ones who spurred us as a local organization to actually get involved when tenants were coming forward and saying, we can't do this. This is unsustainable for our babies. The conditions we're living in are terrible, and the rents are unaffordable. Where are we to go as working people who are creating and giving back into this local economy? What are we to do? What are our options? Mm-hmm. And so the human faces are really, and the human stories are really formed the basis of this campaign. And so, you know, that's really, I think those relationships also, just the human component of what we're talking about, the human relationship, the human interaction, how we treat one another, have to be the basis for forward-thinking policies going forward.
Okay. And we have a number of emails. Lisa says, there's no such thing as trickle-down housing. Please stop echoing the myth that building more will solve this affordable housing crisis. We have another email. I'm a landlord in San Francisco in favor of rent control. I want to speak up for those of us who rent at reasonable rates, even though we know we can make a lot more money by raising the rents. We all need to work on this problem. And let's take a quick call from Denny in Richmond. We're almost out of time, but go ahead, Denny.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks for your show today. I'm here in Richmond, and the rents here in Richmond are just going out of control. And then we have this big spike funded by these, you know, people that are from the industry, you know, against rent control, and it's crazy. You know, a lot of friends up here, you know, we're paying like $3,500 a month to live in a house in Richmond, and it's crazy. There's no reason for that, and there's so many people moving here because, you know, before, the rent was very affordable. So, yeah, I just really want to thank the advocates about talking about rent control, because we really need it here in Richmond, and we're really fighting against these guys, the big industry people that just want to have no rent control. It doesn't make any sense.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Denny. Final thoughts from all of you. Christina, ACE is currently working on this Costa-Hawkins repeal. About 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's going to be a really important fight, and we are going to, you know, put this thing on the ballot in November. So if anybody is interested in helping us collect signatures or getting involved in the fight, contact us. Go to aceaction.org.
Devin, 30 seconds. Final thoughts.
Yes, as well. Just the same, that wherever you have local organizations putting up the fight on behalf of renters, on behalf of tenants, and on behalf of planners and those who, the repercussions are great when we talk about tenant protections, and the situation is to the point where we all have a way to get involved in our local democracy and to build it up from below.
And Deborah, final thoughts.
I think, I know while all of these policies will certainly be important for low-income tenants, you know, who directly will benefit immediately, I think it's going to worsen our affordable housing crisis in the long term. And we put SB2 and SB3 on the ballot that will provide $4 billion in bonds for affordable housing. And I think that answers one of the concerns raised by one of your callers, that we have to have money for affordable housing as well.
Deborah Carlton is Senior VP of Public Affairs for the California Apartment Association. We've also been joined today by Christina Livingston, Executive Director of the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. Davin Cardenas is Co-Director of the North Bay Organizing Project in Santa Rosa. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your phone calls and emails. I will definitely add a show to our list about building new housing and what that would actually do, what it is doing, where we're seeing it, but what we would see if we saw more of it. Coming up tomorrow, we are going to talk about the legalization of marijuana in California, who will benefit, and how will racially biased drug laws change. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. If you missed any of our past shows, David K. Johnston was on talking about his new book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. You can find those shows at yourcallradio.org, or you can podcast the show. You can give us a review on iTunes. Thanks to Andrew Steltzer for producing today's show. Thanks to Lauren Schechter for line producing. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.